Well, this is Suzanne Vega, and I'm here interviewing Jack Hardy, who I've known for many years, and we're going to talk about songwriting.
I think the last time we talked about songwriting is probably about 19 years ago.
Well, there's no reason to date anybody that way, but I know what you mean.
This being tonight is the winter solstice and a full moon, so I think it's a good night to... good day to talk about songwriting.
Okay. I guess most of the time when I think about you and I think about songwriting, I think about your rather well-known statement that the song is more important than the singer, and that's what creates a folk song. And that was sort of, I believe, something we'd all talked about in terms of the definition of folk music. But would you say that's still true just in terms of any kind of song?
I still feel that that's important in terms of the song, that if the song is any good, it means that 100 years from now they'll still be singing it long after they've forgotten who wrote it.
Right.
And I know that's virtual heresy in this pop culture where everything is based on everything but the substance, but much more on terms of promotion and performance and all the trappings.
But I'm curious to know, in your own songwriting, how much of it is autobiographical, or what do you have a sort of rule of thumb what are your own sort of private rules for songwriting? I think I had asked Leonard Cohen one time. I had asked him whether his songs were confessional, did he feel that he confessed? And he said basically that he confessed, or he lied, or he did whatever he had to make the song work, which I thought was an interesting.
Right. Well, I think there's of course a thin line, and of course all songs are going to be somewhat out of your own experience. Even if you're observing what someone else is doing, you're the one who's chosen to pick that to observe. I feel strongly that songs shouldn't be confessional in the way of like somebody's journal. Like, I hear so many songs that are just somebody's journal set to music, and they're so personal as to exclude the audience.
Yeah.
And I feel that songwriting got very indulgent for a while, where built on the cult of stardom, where everyone was so interested in what some superstar had for breakfast that morning that, you know, anything they wrote became important.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily songs that other people can relate to.
Right.
And where that line is, you know, there are no steadfast rules to where that line is, and sometimes you have to push it or pull back. Sometimes something that's very personal ends up universal just because that's what makes the song believable.
Right, right. And does the element of entertainment ever come into it when you're writing a song? Do you ever think about how it will be perceived by your audience, or...
I think entertainment, you know, which of course has always been my short suit, but, you know, or humor specifically.
Well, I don't mean that all entertainment has to be humorous.
Right,
you know,
but
there is an element of writing for an audience.
If I might add another element, the element of drama, which I find is entertaining.
Yes.
If we define entertainment as drama, I think that every song is, you know, potentially almost like a play, and that...
Well, especially in your songs, I'd say there's quite a larger element
of
drama than humor.
I heard a version of your Queen and the Soldier with, I think it's Kate Rusby is her name, British singer, sang recently. It's beautiful. But, you know, that's certainly a play in that song.
Thank you. But is that something that you... I was just curious to know what happens in your own mind as you're sitting in your own room fashioning a song, do you ever think about an audience, even if it's an audience of one, or even if it's someone outside, just someone outside whom you fashion the song for?
I feel strongly that a song is a two-way street. And once again, I think that's the weakness of a lot of modern songwriting, is they're writing it just for what they want to express, or it's all about them, and they forget that someone has to listen to the song.
Yeah.
The song being a metaphysical song, a metaphysical art form, it only exists at that moment that someone is singing it and someone is listening to it. That's the only time the song truly exists.
What do you mean? What can you define metaphysical, just so I...
In the way that you can lock up the singer, but you can't lock up the song. You can lock up Victor Jara and cut off his hands and kill him, but you can't kill his songs.
Right.
And you can burn all the books and burn the CDs, but you can't burn the song.
So you say metaphysical, meaning sort of it exists in a form above the physical.
Right, more realm. Than, you know, the novel, or more than the painting or the sculpture, all which have a physical presence. A song
exists in time.
Exists only at that moment.
Yeah.
And that's what I find truly intriguing about it, and very magical.
Yeah. So, thinking about the topic of magic, is there anything sort of incantational about your work, or do you feel that it's connected to that element in the world?
Well, I feel that it's strongly connected with that element, and I try to connect it. I don't know, somewhere back in the 80s or even the late 70s, I started to get into Celtic mythology and the older mythology that is much more based with the earth and the cycles of the year and the cycles of the moon. And
so is there sort of any element of bells or even prayers or anything?
Well,
the
ancient bards had three powers. The power of enchantment, basically the love song, which we all know and love. And the second was the power of invocation,
right,
which is a little harder to define, which I'll come back to. And the third is the power to curse, which would be like your political diatribe. But the power of invocation is harder to define because, once again, it's more metaphysical, but it's the power of adding an importance and a drama and an overlay to a situation or a process. And I feel that's one of the purposes of folk song, for instance, being asked to write a song for a wedding,
mm-hmm,
or for a baptism, or for a funeral, that's when we turn to that form. It's a different type of song that adds a certain formality to those situation.
It's almost an element of ritual, or
ritual is a good word.
Connecting with a history, or when you say invocation, I think you must be calling forth something. So it must be either, you know, calling forth either a spirit of some kind, of either celebration for a wedding,
or a blessing of some kind, or a presence of some kind, or just saying this is important.
Right.
And
it's also connected with a sense of history of what's gone on before.
And even, you know, I mean, where those three powers, I feel that a songwriter, to be a good songwriter, you have to develop all three of those powers, but they're sort of interrelated. It doesn't mean you write a song that's only this or only that. Recently, I mean, one of the songs on my new album called Eclipse is the first song that I feel I'm really interweaving all three of those powers in the same song.
Mm-hmm.
And
That must be difficult, though. I mean, how would you do that without having three separate subjects for a song? Would you want to write a love song for someone that you're also cursing and invoking?
Well, it might not be that person that you're cursing, and you might be cursing somebody involved with that song, with that person, and invoking the powers of sort of the mystical elements of the moon in terms of the moon being eclipsed by the earth, the mundane, you know, blocking out the rays of the male dominant sun. And
I see. Thanks for explaining that. I don't know. We'll have
but,
to...
you know, all in relating to the story of this person.
Yeah. Well, it obviously must be a song with many many facets to it.
But, you know, I've tried in recent years to have my writing at least on one level a little more accessible. I mean, for a while I was sort of I was out on a few limbs and too many saws were busy.
Well, I'm curious to know also when you, I mean, obviously you must read poetry and you must have, I mean, at least a while back when we were all talking about songwriting, I know that you were reading of quite a few, especially of the Irish poets, and I was wondering what role does poetry play in your songwriting, or do you feel they're connected, or what do you feel is the difference between a poem and a song?
I feel songwriting is poetry, and at the risk of offending all the quote-unquote poets out there, I feel that it's the real poetry. What is modernly known as poetry is sort of a recent affectation of the printing press, which is only 400 years old, where poetry was on a printed page, and we now have poetry readings, and that originally poetry was always sung, even dating back to Homer's age, you know, poetry was sung. It had melody. It was meant to be performed. It was meant to be shared. That the importance is in the sounds of the words. Mm-hmm. That's where I got into the Irish poets, specifically the Gaelic poets, that it was really those poets, Mangan, who sort of reintroduced Gaelic poetry to the likes of Yeats and Joyce, that sort of saved us from iambic pentameter and this sort of British view of poetry that was all locked on the printed page where you could rhyme grain with again.
Right.
You know, that the sounds of the words, the internal rhymes and the assonance and consonants were important. Long before they had names for those, poets were doing them, but they were sung.
Yeah.
So I don't see a delineation between poetry and song. I mean, Yeats in his later years bemoaned the fact he'd never learned an instrument. He realized later that this stuff should be sung, and ran around trying to get people to set his poems to music.
Right. I guess James Joyce did also, I don't know if he sang, but I think he was musical. And I think that comes through in his work. But what about modern poetry or music? I mean, is there any, what do you think about T.S. Eliot or Sylvia Plath or any of those, you know, the poets of this century, do any of them ring true for you, or have any sort of...
They ring true on, you know, a level that, you know, I think reaches me. I mean, I've definitely read them and read them often, some more than others, but
I mean, are there any that resonate for you the same way that say, the older Gaelic poets did?
I still feel, and this is where I may be getting myself into deep water, but I want the stuff to be more accessible to a general audience.
You're talking about your own work?
or, you know, anybody. Poetry in general, poetry or song, should be accessible to a more general audience uh-huh. and shouldn't be exclusionary, uh-huh. Which I feel a lot of the printed poets are.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I've been accused of those same things. That's where I said I'm getting myself into.
Well, it really depends on your perspective. I mean, that's the one thing I found about your work in particular is that you are very influenced by older, by the older styles because of your deep beliefs in terms of where the song comes from. But I was just also wondering whether any part of the songwriting that could be called modern or any part of the poetry that it could be called modern is interesting to you. And I don't mean it just as a movement or what you're talking about, the current poets being exclusionary. I'm talking about like the vocabulary or the style of writing.
Well, it's certainly interesting.
It's a tone,
I certainly,
you know, it's a
pay attention to it. I think everyone would be foolish not to. I mean, I'm aware of it. It's
yeah.
not like I'm living in an ivory tower somewhere.
Okay.
However, I went through a period about the time of my Mirror of My Madness album where I was steeping myself in urban imagery and a much more urban base, but I'm much more into how images and words affect the subconscious of the listener. And if you deal with human beings as having been on this planet for 5 to potentially 10 million years,
mm-hmm.
this little drop in the bucket of urbanization, which is the last 3,000 years, is nothing compared to what has formed the subconscious mm-hmm. of the listener. So even if you're playing to an audience in the city, what's going to affect their subconscious is the more rural, pastoral imagery, not the urban imagery. I'm not talking their rational self. I'm talking their subconscious, emotional self.
Well, that's an interesting premise. I don't know that I agree with it. I don't know also that...
No,
I don't think modern poetry has to be urban necessarily. I think it can be modern and still write about the ocean and still write about, you know, using metaphors in a certain way.
I've heard very little of it that does.
Yeah.
And...
That's fair enough.
And if you take a song as... I mean, like when you're telling a child a bedtime story...
Mm-hmm.
They're not listening to you tell a story. They're in that story.
Right.
They become the princess. Everything that's happening to the princess is happening to them.
Yeah.
And to me, a song, when it's good, does that same thing, places the listener in the song. Because when you move the listener physically into the song, their emotions follow. As long as they're still stuck in their cerebral self, you don't have their emotions. They're still thinking about it. They might think that this is a good song, but you're still in the ego level of, you know, this is good, bad, or, you know, you don't really have their emotions.
Yeah.
So that's what I strive for in a song, is to try to physically move the listener into that song.
Mm-hmm.
And then you bring their emotions and their subconscious with them. I don't always achieve that, but that's at least what I'm aiming for.